Well, as we've been hearing, a preliminary report into the final moments of Rescue 116 has been issued by the Air Accident Investigations Unit. The report details how the crew of R116 made a desperate attempt to avoid colliding with Blackrock Island after their onboard warning system failed to alert them to danger. The helicopter crashed into the island off the Mayo coast on the 14th of March with the loss of all four crew members on board. Captain Dara Fitzpatrick, Mark Duffy, Paul Ormsby and Ciarán Smith, and of course, as we know, the search continues for the bodies of Paul and Ciarán. Now I'm joined by Graham Liddy, aviation safety consultant, formerly with the Air Accident Investigations Unit, and also on the line Lorna Siggins, marine correspondent with the Irish Times. Lorna, first of all to you, what does this preliminary report tell us of the final moments of Rescue 116?
It tells us quite a lot, Sean. 38-page report, which is published as the AAIU must do within a month of accidents, and then it stresses that it's still working on the final report, and it also says that the purpose of the investigation is not to be apportioning blame or liability, but to outline the sequence of events. So it had recovered the black box. The Naval Service divers had recovered the black box from the aircraft, and that was able to give quite a lot of information about the flight from Dublin on the night of March the 13th, and then the approach to Blacksod for refueling. It does say, interestingly, that the crew had initially thought perhaps of going to Sligo for refueling, but then they opted for Blacksod Lighthouse on the North Mayo coast.
Right, and it really is very sad. It's harrowing even to read extracts from in today's papers and in that report from the voice recorder in the moments before the disaster. Clearly, the crew realised something radical was wrong. If I could turn to you now, Graham Liddy, you have a lot of experience in this area previously, of course, having worked with the Air Accident Investigations Unit. What's your sense of what this report tells us?
Morning, Sean. First of all, we need to be conscious that today is a very difficult day for the families of those involved, especially the two who haven't yet recovered their family members, and our thoughts must be with those people. And secondly, I'd like to congratulate the investigation on team led by the investigator in charge, Paul Farrell, who've done a great report in a very difficult situation. They spent the guts of 3 weeks down off the west coast. There was not difficult underwater sea recovery, and then had a lot of other work to do, and then prepared this report and got it published within 30 days. It's quite an achievement. As regards the actual event itself, I think there are a couple of significant factors. One is that there's a positive indication that there was no mechanical malfunction at all with the helicopter. This is positively confirmed by the health and usage monitoring system on board the aircraft, which was recovered. So the investigation is quite satisfied that nothing mechanically failed or malfunctioned immediately prior to the accident. The actual event itself, the captain was alerted by the winch operator, who told her initially to turn right, okay, and she asked him to confirm this, which he confirmed, and then he started told her to come right, and the captain then initiated an evasive maneuver, which basically pitched up the nose of the aircraft and initiated a right-hand turn. During the course of this maneuver, the bottom rear section of the fuselage would appear to have struck black rock, and from there on, the helicopter was mortally damaged, and very shortly thereafter, the tape actually ended. So we know the crew were unaware of the island until about 15 seconds before impact, and then became progressively aware of the seriousness of their situation and did make an evasive manoeuvre, but unfortunately it was too late.
Yes, and that brings me to one of the recommendations, the safety recommendation. Number one, that there should be a review or re-evaluation of all route guides in use by search and rescue helicopters in Ireland. with a view to enhancing the information provided on obstacle heights and positions, terrain clearance, vertical profile and so forth in the database. Now, there's an interesting fact that has emerged about what was in the database.
Yes.
That's
quite a complex safety recommendation. There's a lot in it, in actual fact. The kernel of the matter is that the Black Rock, which is a very substantial piece of island rising up to a height of 281 feet, is not in what's known as the EGPWS, the Enhanced Ground Proximity Warning System database, which means this is a warning system to advise the crew that there is an obstacle in front of them. They have a radio altimeter which tells them what's directly below the aircraft and their height above that, the surface of the earth at that particular point, but it doesn't give them any information about what's actually out in front of them. And the EGPWS was introduced to actually give them this information. Within the EGPWS, there is a terrain map of the entire world, in actual fact, and all obstacles are listed in that database. And it gives the pilots progressive warning that they are approaching ground that is either rising up to meet them or, in actual fact, may actually be higher than the helicopter. And if they continue on their present course, they're going to collide with it. So it's a very important last gate safety feature. And it's frankly very concerning that this island, very substantial island, was actually missing from the database.
And again, this is a preliminary report we know, but the manufacturer of the EGPWS, that's the Enhanced Ground Proximity Warning System, the manufacturer informed the investigation the lighthouse obstacle is not in the obstacle database and the terrain of the island is not in our terrain database. Any idea why it mightn't be?
Okay. The company who makes this particular piece of equipment in the United States get the information about the terrain from the various states throughout the world. So it's basically the state of Ireland who provides this company with the information about the terrain modelling for Ireland. So it would appear from the letter from this company that's included in the report that the information that they got from the state of Ireland didn't actually include this vital information about the Black Rock.
And when you say the state of Ireland, is that the Department of Transport? Is it Ordnance Survey? I mean, what state or what branch of the state of Ireland would be involved in this?
Well, by international convention, the prime responsibility rests with the Department of Transport. They then have delegated a significant number of their aviation responsibilities to other organisations, principally the Irish Aviation Authority. But there will be, as you pointed out, there will be other organisations such as Ordnance Survey involved in providing information on this. So I think we're going to have to leave it up to the investigation to actually determine where this information was not completed in the appropriate manner.
Yes, and they haven't said what the cause of the crash is. They haven't said that absent data is necessarily the cause of the crash. We have to wait for their final report. And what about the other element of it, which is the review the viability of the installation provisions and instructions, for locator beacons on the life jackets. What's the significance of that?
The significance there is that the captain of the aircraft appears to have been thrown clear of the aircraft, or she may have evacuated the airplane after it contacted the sea. We're not sure about this fact. But she wasn't found for several hours afterwards, and she was pronounced dead shortly after she was recovered from the sea. So there's a question mark that if the beacon in our life jacket had gone off as it should have gone off, that Rescue 118, the other helicopter that was involved, might have found her several hours earlier and that she might have survived. Now, the issue at point here is that the beacon assembly in the life jacket has two components, a transmission aerial, GPS aerial, and the actual beacon itself. And the manufacturer of the beacon has issued an instruction saying that if these two components are mounted close to each other, less than approximately 1 foot or 30 centimeters apart, then there is the possibility that they will interfere with each other, and that the signal, the emergency signal, which the helicopter would use to home in on the person wearing the life raft jacket, that signal wouldn't actually function correctly.
Yeah.
So it's an important feature. I think there'll be a lot more research will have to be done to determine if that was actually a factor or not, or was there some other reason why the beacon malfunctioned. But definitely, at this stage, there is information that the way the life jacket was constructed and the two items were stored was not in accordance with the manufacturer's recommendations. That's the recommendations of the beacon manufacturer, not the life jacket manufacturer.
As you say, Graeme, it's a terribly difficult day for the families of the crew, Dara and Mark and Paul and Ciarán. But one of the other things that's mentioned or highlighted in this report, this preliminary report, it talks about how the cockpit voice recorder recorded Captain Fitzpatrick commenting to other crew members on a number of occasions that it had been a substantial period of time since she had previously landed in Black Sod, and then on one occasion she asked the co-pilot when he had last been into Black Sod, and he indicated that he hadn't been there recently. Now, what do you attach significance to that?
I do. I think it's quite an unusual comment. You know, people don't comment about things that don't concern them, and so we have to ask the question as to why she made this comment, and was she actually concerned about the matter? We don't know how long ago it was since she was into Black Sod. Are we talking about weeks? Are we talking months? Are we even talking about years? Another point that needs to be examined, which I'm sure the investigation will do, is whether she went in there in the last time in an S-92, which is new helicopter operated by the Coast Guard, or the older S-61. Now, the equipment and the older helicopter is much inferior to what's in the current helicopter, and therefore the procedures for going in there would have been quite different. So it's an important point to be clarified. And she also queried the co-pilot about his experience, and he replied that he hadn't been in there recently. So I think it was definitely an issue of concern to her. And it also raises some concerns about the currency training. Is there a deficiency in the currency training? By currency training, I mean, you know, pilots do their initial training, but it needs to be revised. So it's this kind of revision training that they need to do at a regular basis. Was that being done frequently enough? And Black Sod at night in bad weather would be a particularly difficult place to get into. It's surrounded by a number of islands, Achill Island to the south and high ground to the east.
Yeah.
So it's and in the kind of weather conditions that were prevalent on the night, it would not have been an easy task, and therefore you would need to be fairly familiar with it to successfully bring off a successful night approach.
Okay, and to come back to you, Lorna Siggins, Marine Correspondent of the Irish Times, I suppose that is one of the key points. This was a Dublin-based crew as opposed to one that would have been flying in and out of there maybe much more frequently.
Yeah, and this obviously is one of the issues in the review of the flight data by the Air Accident Investigation Unit. But it does say that the crew were mission-focused in their communications, and there was minimal extraneous conversation. And then I suppose the first indication that something was really wrong was when the radio altimeter provided this call out of altitude, and then one of the winch crew alerted the pilots to the fact that there was an island directly ahead. That was just 13 seconds before the initial impact.
Yes, and again, a bit like Graeme Liddy, you're quite struck by the fact, and this has been, I suppose, the subject of some conversation, I won't say confusion, but people just wondering why there were no locator beacons picked up shortly after the crash. That's certainly been the subject of much commentary, it has been up to now.
Yeah, there's there's real concern about that among aircrew and among anybody who's on the water, fishermen who were involved in the search and who were very extensively involved last weekend. They kept raising this issue. Why were there no locator beacon signals picked up? And so that's a really important finding in the report. As Graham says, it's something that's, you know, has to be investigated further, but it would certainly explain why, you know, this and would add to the agony in relation to the search. And one really does have to feel for the families. It's just a terrible experience, and then to have to read this report as well, just harrowing. And the fact that the families of Paul Ormsby and Kieran Smith still don't know where their men are, and that search is continuing. Superintendent Tony Leahy of Belmullet Garda has said he hopes to get Garda divers down around Blackrock Island as soon as the weather eases in the next couple of days. And the Irish Coast Guard did scale back the search somewhat with withdrawing the Irish lightship Gronewale, but there's still a determination, and a great determination by the community. The entire community in North Mayo is really invested in this. They feel it for the families. They've had experience themselves before. They know this area, and I suppose the entire island, really.
And Lorna, given that it is the Easter weekend, and some people may have be in a position to give some time that they don't have to go to work. I mean, is there a need, or are they looking for volunteers really who might be willing to help, for instance, just with coastal searches, or what's the position?
Well, as I understand, they are very keen for assistance, but in a coordinated and in a safe way. And so I suppose anyone who is interested, I suppose the first point of contact at the moment would be either through the Irish Coast Guard or Belmullet Garda Station, Superintendent Leahy. And there have been obviously people who are attached to mountain rescue teams, people involved in civil defence, and then through their own Irish Coast Guard units. They've been giving a lot of time and travelling up there, and there are more plans for people to travel. The Carrickinshire River Rescue has returned to the area as well. So people have been coming from all over. And then there's the community itself in Ocklame. I think they're actually out the door now with food at this stage, but they really have appreciated all that support. And the RNLI lifeboats as well, you know, they've been doing work sort of almost out of sight, but very much in mind with the community up there.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Thank you both indeed. What a sad story, and a really sad time for the families as well. pardon me. My thanks to Lorna Siggins, Marine Correspondent with the Irish Times, and to Graham Liddy, Aviation Safety Consultant, now retired from the Air Accident Investigations Unit. We'll be talking to Declan Parr, security and military expert, about that mother of all bombs dropped yesterday by the Americans in Afghanistan. That's after the break.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.